what I thought I would do is talk to you a little bit about my path going from being in a similar seat to the one y'all are in to being state auditor and kind of what we do. And then that really is my story of opportunity in Mississippi, because I wanted to be back here because I saw opportunity in the state. And then tell you a little bit about some of the stuff that we do in the auditor's office, and would love to take any questions that you have. And some of the stuff that we do in the auditor's office, I think, is one, leading on these issues that we all care about, and hopefully in the long run creating even more opportunity in Mississippi for economic growth and for our state to be everything it can be. So, who am I? Why am I standing up here? I grew up in Jones County, Laurel, Mississippi. Y'all know where Laurel is? Yes? There's a show about it now? Yeah. On HGTV? Yeah. Laurel, Mississippi. I grew up right outside Laurel, Mississippi in a little bitty, smaller town called Sandersville, a town of about 700 people. And I'll tell you the story. Growing up, my dad was an oil field pumper. My mom was a school teacher. But my dad, in addition to being an oil field pumper, was also an elected official in our little bitty town. So every Tuesday night, he would come in from work, and he's covered in oil and dirt, and he would take his boots off, and he would knock them off and put them down and eat a bite to eat real quick and wash his hair and then leave again and go across the street to City Hall and do the business of the city, our little town of 700 people, for the evening. And growing up, I kind of thought that everybody's mom or dad, one or the other, did that. Like everybody did that. But then I realized, no, this is just something that he does. And asked him one day, once I was old enough to realize that, I asked him, why do you go do that? Spend time away from us? You're tired, you worked all day. And his answer was, he believed that every single person had a duty to give back to their community in some kind of way. And for some folks, that's working in your church. For some folks, that's running for office like he did. For some folks, that's working with a charity or working with a think tank like MCPP. But everybody's got some duty to do that, to make their community better. So I really latched on to that belief, and it's one of the reasons why I wanted to do public service one day. I didn't know exactly what that would look like, but it's one of the reasons why I wanted to do public service. So I graduated high school in Jones County, went off to Ole Miss, Hotty Toddy, went off to Ole Miss, and still sort of figuring out, what I wanted to do and how I wanted to be engaged in the world. And I looked around campus after a couple of years on campus, and I saw some stuff that I thought could be improved. For example, we had a whole bunch of fraternities and sororities, but they all seemed to be off doing their own thing, and I thought we should have big shared community service projects between all the fraternities and sororities, a bunch of different little ideas like that. And so I decided my junior year, I'm going to run for student body president at Ole Miss. And I started telling a couple of my buddies, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. And one of my buddies said, that's neat and all, Shad, but you definitely are not going to win. There's no way you can win. I was like, okay, lay it on me. Why am I not going to win? He said, well, one, you're from a little town in the middle of nowhere. And, some folks come to Ole Miss, and a lot of their high school friends also go to Ole Miss, so they know a bunch of people straight away. And you didn't know anybody when you came here. So your network's going to be a little bit smaller. Two, you're not in a fraternity. And there's this guy from the biggest, baddest fraternity in town who is going to run for student body president. So there's just no way. There's no way he can be. So I heard it and I thought about it. And I was like, I'm going to give it a go anyway, because I do think that these ideas that I've built over the last couple of years would actually make campus better. And so I'm going to give this a shot. So I just worked as hard as I possibly could, campaigned, and had a ton of fun. So I would wake up at 4:30 a.m. and I would go speak to the girls' riflery team and their practice at 5 a.m., which is a real thing, right? They're out there. 5 a.m. and then I would, go to class and campaign during the day, and then go speak to the Accounting Honor Society at 8:30 p.m. and then do my homework after that. And I loved it. I had a great time doing that. Election day came along. It was pouring rain all day, so I stood outside and shook people's hands as they were coming into the big student union to go vote. And there's this picture of me in the student newspaper at the time, soaked up to here in water and just holding an umbrella and still shaking hands out there. So election day comes, polls close. What do you think happened? Guess.
You won.
I did not win. I appreciate your faith in me, though, Drew, from Madison, Mississippi. I lost by 36 votes, but who's counting? Lost by 36 votes. But at the end of it, I thought, that was a really fun experience. I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about running for office. So here's one big lesson I wish somebody had told me earlier on. You know, you're going to set goals in your life and try to pursue them, and sometimes they're going to work, and sometimes they're just not going to work out. And most of the really good things that have happened in my life have happened when a goal didn't work out, and I bounced back well from that. That's been the biggest lesson I learned. So just using that as an example, I didn't get elected student body president. So now I sort of planned my life around needing a bunch of spare time my senior year in college. Like, what am I going to do with my spare time? So I went and volunteered at a nonprofit in town. I think it made my resume look a little bit better because I had more than just student government on my resume. Helped my grades out a whole lot, I know that. And so at the end of undergrad, I ended up applying for something called the Rhodes Scholarship. Have y'all heard of this? The Rhodes Scholarship. So applied for the Rhodes Scholarship and amazingly was selected for this. Got to go over to Oxford, England, your old haunt, and study for a year and a half over there and get a master's degree. If I had not lost that election, I don't think I would have been selected as a Rhodes Scholar, because I think my resume would have been much flatter. I think my grades would have been worse. So point being, I would tell you, as you go into college, as you're finishing up, as you're getting your first job, there's going to be some stuff that doesn't work out. And so I hope you see that, to go back to our theme, I hope you see that as an opportunity. Okay, what can I do next? How can I use my time now that that thing hadn't worked out? What's my second best plan, and how am I going to execute on that? So I go off to England, had a great time over there, started to think I really need to figure out what I'm going to do, you know, as a grown-up now. So I decided to apply to some law schools. At the time when I was applying to law schools, it took about $200, $250 per application. So I applied to Yale and to Harvard, and then I ran out of money. And I was like, all right, see if I get in, because I'm broke now and I don't have any more money. So thankfully, I got into both schools, decided to go off to Harvard Law School. Had a really interesting time up there, and really still didn't quite know how I wanted to use my law degree, what I wanted to do. But as I was there, I noticed that I really loved criminal law, which I had not anticipated. I took a first year criminal law class, which everybody has to take, and I loved it. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. So I took that, and then I started taking every single thing that I could think to take in the criminal law world. So I took criminal procedure, and I took corporate law, which was a deep dive into white-collar fraud in big companies, and I took accounting for lawyers, and I worked at a prosecutor's office in Boston for 20 hours a week. So I did all this stuff because as time went on, I started to realize, you know what, I think I want to be a prosecutor. I think this is maybe what God's calling me to do. It's where my interest lies. I'm going to go do this thing. So I finish up with law school. I'm going to go be a prosecutor. And there's tons of opportunity back home. I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to go back home. I don't want to be a prosecutor anywhere else. I want to go back to Mississippi. I want to be a prosecutor. And it didn't work out. Just couldn't find the job. So I worked on a campaign for a while. The campaign was over. Tried it again. Put a whole bunch of resumes out there. And I'm thinking, I'm a Harvard Law graduate. I'm going to get a job as a prosecutor. No jobs. Zero jobs. Didn't get a job. So I ended up taking a job at a law firm and just doing civil law. So that's just, you know, going to court and doing normal things that lawyers do. But the thing I learned during that phase of life, if the first lesson is bounce back from adversity when things don't go your way, second big thing I learned during that phase of life is, yeah, you're going to end up maybe in a position where you didn't necessarily want to be, but whatever you're doing at that moment, work hard and do it well. So in that law firm, you know, we would go to trial, and my typical work day would be 7 a.m. to like 1:30 a.m. I would be working that entire time when I wasn't eating, go to bed, sleep a few hours, wake up, go back to work again. And some of the tasks were super boring. I mean, one day it'd be a whole box of files, several boxes, and I have to look through every sheet of paper to try to find one sheet of paper that's going to help us in our trial. You know, really sort of tough tasks, long hours. And I think at that moment I could have said, well, this is not really what I want to do. I wanted to be a prosecutor. I'm going to kind of do the bare minimum on this project so that I can just kind of get through this and earn my paycheck. But that wasn't fulfilling to me, and I didn't feel like I would be doing my boss justice. And so I poured myself into that kind of stuff and worked really hard. And I think because I worked hard during that couple of years that I was in a law firm, I built a good reputation as a lawyer. And then all of a sudden, when the job at the Mississippi Center for Public Policy opened up, I was kind of at the top of the list of young lawyers in town that they wanted to talk to about coming over here. So they have not met Aaron Rice yet?
Not yet.
You'll meet Aaron. I was in Aaron's job before Aaron was in that job. So Mike Hurst was the first director of the Mississippi Justice Institute, and then he left here, and so they were looking for a new lawyer to take it over. So I ended up getting that job. Wanted to be a prosecutor that whole time, had my mind set on it, but because I had taken the opportunities that I did have and worked hard, this thing opened up, which I never would have even imagined when I was in law school, and I loved it. I loved it here. We got to, you'll hear this from Aaron, I got to sue the government when they were hurting a small business and making it difficult for them to grow. When a group of politicians tried to break our ethics laws, I filed suit on behalf of some local citizens for free and challenged those politicians. Just a lot of fun cases that I thought made Mississippi better and really were fulfilling at the end of the day. I could go home and say, this was something good that we did working here. And then, because some of our cases got to be in the news when I was over at MCPP, I was in this office back here, actually. When I was here, because some of the cases got to be in the news, when the state auditor's office came open, I was, again, on the short list to get appointed to the state auditor's office. And so, at the age of 32, I got appointed to be state auditor and have been doing that job for 5 years ever since then. So that's big lesson for me, number two, is whatever you happen to be doing, it may not be the ideal job that you always wanted, but do well at that thing, and the next thing will open up. The next opportunity will open up. So now I'm state auditor. Anybody have any idea what the state auditor is, does? No?
I think they audit stuff.
That's right. You're on the right track. I like that. They do audit stuff. We do audit stuff. So the general mission is this. We try to make sure that government money is spent the way the law requires. So that means if somebody is stealing government funds or property, we'll go do a criminal investigation. So I get to do criminal stuff now. We go do a criminal investigation, and we'll dig up all of the dirt and all the documents, and we'll do all the interviews, and then we'll take that evidence file, and we'll take it to a prosecutor, and the prosecutor will prosecute them, and then that person will have to pay the money back. They often go to jail, so we get to do that. We do these routine audits, which means we'll show up at government offices and say, hey, guess what? We're going to check your books and make sure all the numbers add up, make sure the way you're claiming you're spending money is the way you're actually spending money. So it's a really, really fun job. It sounds boring. Auditing sounds boring, right? The word itself sounds boring. But it's actually an incredibly fun job. And we've had a lot of fun in the last 5 years because we've achieved some really good results, my team and I. So we have about 135 employees. Most of us work in the Wolfolk building right over there. We've recovered more money in the last 5 years than any other five-year period in the history of the state of Mississippi because of all these investigations that we've done. And so I love this thing that I do now, even though I never would have imagined I'd be doing it back in the middle of law school. And I get to do kind of the law and order stuff, too, because we dig into embezzlement and theft and white-collar crime in a way that I never would have thought when I wanted to be a prosecutor back in law school. So third kind of final lesson, I guess, is, you know, in every job that I've had, but especially this job, you really, as you're beginning your career, I tell you that one of the most important things you can do is do the right thing every time, even when it's hard. So I'll tell you about one of the biggest cases that we had. It's the big welfare fraud case here in Mississippi. You may have read about this case. So back in 2019, we started doing this investigation, and we found that a whole bunch of money that's in the welfare program, which is supposed to be money that goes to poor folks, a whole bunch of that money was either being stolen or it was being spent on stuff that just didn't benefit poor people at all. So the way this works, may I steal the back of your thing here? I'm going to draw a diagram real fast because I'm a nerd and this helps. So the way welfare is supposed to work is the state government gets all this welfare money, and they can give it to poor people. That's one thing to do. Or they can give it to a charity, a nonprofit. So examples of charities, Salvation Army, y'all know plenty of charities and nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And then the nonprofit can do stuff for poor people. So this is the way it can work, one of these two ways. What we found is that money was being given to a nonprofit, but some of the money was going to benefit the people who ran the nonprofit, like buying cars and a house and stuff like that. And then some of the money was being spent on other stuff. That's a football field. Was being spent on other stuff that's just of no benefit to poor people. So an example is the nonprofit bought some advertisements for themselves at a college football game out of state. That doesn't help Mississippi poor people, as it turns out. So we uncovered this big scheme. It took us months and months of digging, talking to people, doing interviews, diving into a bunch of documents and invoices and all of the boring stuff that auditors do. And then at the beginning of 2020, we took all of that over to the local DA, the district attorney. He indicted, which means he charged with a crime. He charged six people with a crime, and that put a stop to this whole scheme. So at that moment, all of this becomes public. It was in the New York Times. It was a big deal. And some of the people who were running this nonprofit were very influential in town. I'll say that. They're very influential. They know a whole bunch of people. And so because it was just me and the DA saying all this happened and nobody else, there were a lot of people who were really skeptical and said, oh, well, there's no way those people who are well-respected in town at that nonprofit could have ever done anything like this. I'll tell you this fast story. I was in church one Sunday after all this broke, after the news of all this broke. And church is over, it's done, I'm getting up, and I'm like getting my daughter ready in her little carrier thing. And this woman who's sitting in the pew in front of me turns around and says, you're Shad White, the state auditor. I said, yes, ma'am. And she said, well, I know those people who run that nonprofit, and you're wrong, and you should be embarrassed for yourself. And I was like, have a good Sunday. Took my daughter and walked out of there. Those were really difficult times, as you can imagine, because there's a ton of public pressure on me. But at the same time, I knew that we had done a good job, that we did the work, that we dug into these documents. We knew what we were talking about, my team and I. And so during those moments, you may not have a moment that tough or weird or dramatic or whatever it is, but I guarantee you, regardless of what you do in life, you're going to have difficult moments where you have to do the right thing, even when it's not the most popular thing. And I will tell you, if you do the right thing, even when it's not the most popular thing, odds are it's going to work out the right way. You may suffer some consequences on the road, but in the long run, it's going to work out the right way. So those are my three big lessons that I think I've learned in the last few years in my road to this job is, you know, bounce back when things are tough, work hard at the thing you're doing, even if it's not the ideal thing at the moment. And then when you get in these tough moments, do the right thing, even when it's difficult to do the right thing. I'll cap this off by going back to our theme. I made the decision when I was in law school to come back here to Mississippi. And the reason I did so was mainly selfish. I think this is a great place to live. And I think it's very difficult sometimes for folks who are in high school or college to see this as the ideal place to live. It was difficult for me when I was in high school. I wanted to get out and do something else. And then I went to Ole Miss and I was like, I want to get out and do something else. The thing I realized living abroad, living in Washington, D.C. for a period, living in Massachusetts when I was in law school, the thing I realized is that this is a great place to raise a family. If you want to have kids, if you want to have a family, this is a great place to make a difference. There's so much good you can do here. If I had moved to New York and worked in a law firm, do you think I'd be state auditor of New York right now? No, I'd be in a law firm somewhere. I might be making more money. But I would not be fulfilled. I would not be fulfilled, and I would not have made the difference that I think that we've made in the last few years. Because of this case right here, just one case, because of that case, millions of dollars of welfare money that were going to benefit rich folks often got cut off. And now, because of that case, Republicans in Congress in Washington, D.C. have actually authored six bills this month to completely change the way welfare works for the entire country. And they even said the reason we're doing this is all the lessons we learned in Mississippi specifically. That's powerful. And that lets me go to sleep every Friday night when I'm done with the week of work and think, you know, sometimes this job is hard, but we did something this week. We did something to create more opportunity for people here. So I hope that as you're going along your life, whether you leave Mississippi for a period or not, I hope that you see that there's great opportunity in this place and that you'll come back here because, or move here, because this is a great place to raise a family. This is a great place where you can make a difference. Feels like enough blathering. Enough audit blathering.